From NPR News, this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday, and I'm Joe Palca. We've talked this hour about fire. Now we're shifting gears and seasons to talk about ice. Well, snow, to be more accurate. Throughout the bitter cold northern winter, the Canadian lynx hunts the snowshoe hare, leaving tracks in the snow that scientists can follow. The scientists, clad in their own snowshoes, have been on the trail of the animals in order to understand their ecosystem, and it's turning out to be more complex than researchers thought. The snowshoe hare eats shrubs, and the lynx eats the snowshoe hare, and that's simple enough, but add climate to the equation and some interesting patterns emerge. It appears that the number of lynx depends not only upon the abundance of hares, but also on large-scale climate variations. That's the conclusion of a study published in this week's Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Climate affects snow fluffiness, and snow fluffiness can affect the ability of the lynx to hunt hare. You got that, right? It's all clear. Okay, in that case, we don't need to talk to Dr. Bouton, but I think since it's probably a little murky, we will talk to Dr. Stan Bouton. He's the professor in the Department of Biological Sciences at the University of Alberta in Edmonton, Canada, and author of the PNAS paper. He joins us today by phone from his office in Edmonton. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Bouton.
Glad to be on.
So, maybe we should start a little bit. First, let me remind people that our number here is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK if you want to join this conversation about the lynx and the hare. But maybe we should, first of all, before we try to sort out what's going on with the snow, talk about why scientists are interested in studying lynx and hare in the first place.
Yeah, I think that's probably the easiest place to start. And it has a long history, actually, because we actually have some very long-term records of changes in the numbers of both lynx and hare over broad regions of Canada. And those records come from a fairly unusual place, actually, not collected by scientists, but by people that were involved in the fur trade. And the main company involved was the Hudson's Bay Company, and they were very instrumental in developing or exploring much of the reaches of northern Canada. And they did so because they were after various furs from the Aboriginals in the area. And they were meticulous record keepers, and as a consequence, we have over 100 years of records of pelts that they collected on a yearly basis. And the striking component in those records is the fact that the lynx in particular shows these very striking 10-year cycles with like clockwork over that long period of time.
Cycles as in the number of lynx in a given year? Okay.
Yeah, so the number of lynx in a given year can go from extremely low values to extremely high values with a very regular time step, and that regular time step is around 9 to 11 years.
Huh.
So every 10 years in Canada's northern forests, you get very abundant numbers of snowshoe hares and their main predator, the lynx. And the lynx data are nicely recorded by these Hudson's Bay records. So this has always fascinated scientists once this information was discovered, and it set lots of people looking at what would cause these violent changes in numbers of these players in the boreal forest. And we got involved in it for that very reason, to try and piece together what could create the dynamics of this boom and bust system across vast areas of our northern forests.
Do they track together, or do the number of hares go up with the number of lynx, or do they kind of offset each other? If the lynx are eating the hares, then one must be going down when the other's going up.
Well, actually, they are very tightly linked, and they track each other quite closely, with the hare leading the charge, if you will, and the lynx following behind. And that, by that I mean that the peaks in numbers of hares occur about 1 to 2 years before the peak in numbers of lynx. And this mainly comes about because of the differences in reproductive rates of the two species. The hare, as many people realize, have a very major ability to reproduce rapidly. The predator, the lynx, can do so as well, but not nearly at the rate of hares. And for example, a snowshoe hare in the summertime in our northern areas can have as many as 4 litters, and each of those litters can have 3 to 5 youngsters in them. So a female snowshoe hare can produce 20 babies in a year, whereas a mother lynx produces maybe a maximum of 6 in good times.
Okay, and so how does it work out that this cycle is the 10 years, and then does the climate play a role in that, or not this particular part of the climate story?
No, we don't think that climate plays a role in setting the period length, as we call it, of the cycle, i.e. creating the 9 to 11 year periodicity. That seems to come about because of the very unique interaction between the lynx and the hares. And in terms of the way the system seems to work, the snowshoe hare is the focal part of it, and it lives on vegetation, as you pointed out, mainly shrubby vegetation where it clips small twigs off in the winter and feeds on those. And the hare interacts with its food, obviously, and as its numbers get higher and higher, it doesn't run into absolute food shortage, but it seems to be enough of a crunch that you start to see a slowdown in the reproductive rate of the snowshoe hares. And the lynx are following behind, and their numbers are directly driven by the number of hares that are present. So when times are good, these lynx are cranking out youngsters like crazy, and they're feeding and doing very well on the hares. Once the reproductive rate at the peak of the hares, though, is slowed down just a little bit, it seems that the predators can then, in a way, catch up to the hares, and they actually overshoot them, and they start to cause the numbers of hares to decline very drastically. So you can go from, we used to live trap these animals to put little ear tags in their ears and follow their numbers over time, and we would have 50 to 80 traps on a study site, and in the low period you could set those traps and go out the following morning to check for animals and maybe find one or two. In the peak, you could go out and find every single trap with a snowshoe hare in it. You could do that for a second day and the traps would be full again, and they'd be virtually all different hares. So that's how striking the change in numbers is in this cycle. And the lynx catch up and they just eat the hare system out of house and home, if you will, and that's what causes the major decline in numbers that we see out there.
Well, our number has stayed very stable. It's 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. Give it a call if you want to talk to us about lynx and hare. So I think before we take callers, we have to finish the story, and that is what's the deal with these climate change or this this snow business?
Well, the link to the snow and the climate seems to come in relation to the fact that these cycles occur right across the country over very vast geographic ranges. And as we started to look at the patterns of the cycles, we found that there are actually three very distinct regions across the country: the Pacific, which is west of the Rockies, and then a large central portion, which is everything basically between the Rockies and east of the or west of the Hudson's Bay, and then an eastern portion. And if you looked at the information, the overall cycle was the same, but there were very subtle but detectable differences in these three regions, and the synchrony of the cycles within each of those regions was stronger within than between. And that got us thinking about, well, what could cause these different regional patterns out there? And, to make a long story short, we found that we think that climate is driving some of this. And the neat thing about it is that this climate can, in fact, feed into affecting the genetics of the system we see out there and creating these almost three distinct populations of lynx in the region. But what's also fascinating is that with genetics, often one, to have differentiation of genetics, you usually can't have much flow between populations, and they have to be isolated to some extent. That makes it, and they are isolated east versus, or the western versus the central area, but there's no physical barrier at all between the central portion and the eastern portion of their range. And and yet there's distinct differences between the two areas. And that got us thinking about some role that climate might be playing there, and we feel it is tying into large-scale climate patterns, one of the main ones being the North Atlantic Oscillation, which is weather patterns that are very similar to what people are most familiar with, I would suspect, which is the El Nino effect. It's these broad patterns that change slowly over time but can have pretty drastic effects on average climate. Well, lo and behold, the effects of the North American Oscillation operate differently on one side of this invisible barrier in the east versus the central. On either side, it's doing quite different things. And the link, we think, comes in finally to this aspect linking to snow, that one side of the area tends to lead to more hard, crusty snow versus the other side having much more fluffy snow. And where this feeds back to the lynx and hare is, it's kind of this ongoing game between the lynx and hare as to who can win out, if you will, in this battle between predator and prey. And slight changes in snow condition, we think, favor one or the other. When the snow is very fluffy, we think the advantage goes to the snowshoe hare. When the snow gets a little bit harder, the advantage goes to the lynx.
Our number is 800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. And I'm Joe Palka, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I guess I have to get you to finish that. So in other words, hard snow, the lynx can run on the top and get the hare, and soft snow, the lynx is at a disadvantage because it sinks in.
Yeah, that's the basic argument. But remember clearly that lynx will always get some snowshoe hares regardless of the snow conditions. So it's just very subtle shifts in the balance between these two characters that is going on with these changing snow conditions. And we collected this data, as you pointed out, by tracking lynx in the snow and looking at the organisms they tried to kill, and when they made an attempt and when they were successful versus when they made attempts and were unsuccessful. And the snow is a lovely advantage for our research in that regard because it leaves these lovely stories in the actual snow, and you can piece together just how successful lynx are in various snow conditions. And from that data, we collected this over a full cycle of 10 years. There's some suggestion that definitely lynx are slightly more successful when the snow conditions are a little harder versus when they're softer.
Interesting. Let's take a call. Mark from Jacksonville, North Carolina. Is that correct? You're on the air.
Yes, it is. Love the show.
Thanks.
Listen every Friday.
Good.
Sir, my thought is, how long will the study most likely continue, and what would be the long-term benefits, especially since some of it seems to be, petty, but it seems like if you have a lot of hares and you have hungry cats, they're going to go get them. So what would be the long-term actual benefits to the Canadian terrain there? Thanks again for Science Friday.
Thank you, Mark. Bye-bye. What about that?
Yeah, the issue is that the lynx-hare interaction is what we feel a completely natural component of our northern forests, and an extremely important one because this regular pulse in the system has really strong effects down into the vegetation and up into other predators in the community. So in many ways, I think it's a signature phenomena, if you will, for our northern forest. So obviously we want that sort of thing to continue if we're interested in conservation of these areas and having them as fully functioning forests. So our interest in this study is to obviously understand how that works, but the broader implications are related to, well, as we can continue to change our environment either through climate change or by changing the composition of the forest through industrial activity like harvesting or exploration of oil and gas, what might that do to this very important cycle in the system? And that's why we're continuing to study it. That's the connection to human issues, if you will, because if we, in fact, disrupt this cycle by severe climate change or rapid climate change, that's going to ramify through to a lot more than just snowshoe hares and lynx.
Well, an important question to keep an eye on, and I'm afraid that's where we'll have to leave it for this hour. Thank you very much, Dr. Booten.
You're very welcome.
Dr. Stan Booten is professor of the Department of Biological Sciences at the University of Alberta in Edmonton, Canada. Earlier, we spoke with Peter Strittmatter at the University of Arizona's Stewart Observatories and with Kingsley Dixon from the Kings Park and Botanical Garden and the University of Western Australia. Kevin Wade is our technical director here on Science Friday. Our audio engineers are Matt Galick and Rigo Cardi and Paul Masiello in New York. Greg Smith composed our theme music. We had help today from NPR librarians Key Molesky and Alphonse Finn. If you have questions or comments, write to us at Science Friday, 55 West 45th Street, 4th floor, New York, New York, 10036. You can also email us at our internet address, which is scifry@npr.org.